Adam here. Thursday, the 5th of January, 2023, for the Reading and Observation podcast with Adam. These podcasts are only in the members area for the CRES members, so jump into the members area, have a look, see what's going up, and enjoy. As I said, we'll be just continuing on from the last podcast, a couple up already. This will be the third one. So have a listen to the other ones if you've missed them. And we're talking about afterlife experience, what happens after we pass. And Philip K. Dick, his extraordinary experiences that he had in his life. And so continuing that theme into these podcasts for folks to listen along to. And hope you enjoy. Hope everyone's doing fine. On the last podcast here, we were looking at negative near-death experiences and hell and what this could all mean. Very interesting. I have an old book on this and I don't know. I'm trying to dig it up. It was written by a lady who had these negative experiences. This is something that can be very common, you know. And so it is something to bring in here to discuss. So looking at negative near-death experiences and hell, these are going back and all different things, articles and things and stuff that I save. Near-death experiences, which are NDEs, have garnered a reputation of being blissful, otherworldly, and adventures complete with encounters with lost loved ones. While many NDEers, near-death experiences, do consider their close brushes with death to be positive, 1 or 2% report having negative near-death experiences. In this article, Major Center, we're looking at different types of negative near-death experiences. Common responses of people who experience a distressing NDE, and what negative NDE stories can teach us about hell. Plus, get access to additional resources as well. There's a lot in this one. So we'd be looking at three types of negative near-death experiences. A near-death experience takes place when a person undergoes clinical death. Yet a transphysical component of that person leaves the physical body, emerges outside of it, and frequently is able to look down upon it. These are common experiences as well. As noted above, NDEs are typically positive reports involving components such as feelings of peace and painlessness and an encounter with a loving white light. We've covered this over the years as well. While aspects of negative near-death experiences are similar to positive ones, the negative NDEs relay a distressing experience. An article by NDE experts Nancy Evans-Bush, MA, and Bruce Grison, MD, identifies three different types of negative near-death experiences: inverse, void, and hellish. Inverse NDE. So inverse NDEs takes place when the common pleasant features of a near-death experience are not at all pleasant. For example, seeing the white light is often a source of comfort and peace. However, in the inverse NDE, the white light might appear threatening and bring on panic and or desperation or depression of some type. The void NDE. In the void NDE, one encounters deep isolation and loneliness. And there are many accounts. One is, I suddenly was surrounded by total blackness, floating in nothing but black space, with no up, no down, left or right. What seemed like an eternity went by. I fully lived in this misery. I was only allowed to think and to reflect. We talked about this with Barry Eaton as well, about people in a very negative state of being going to these kinds of places where there may be nothing there or just empty empty kind of plains where there's nothing there, or they may be, they might find themselves in very dark environments, in rooms, in cities, in hellish kind of feeling places that look hellish, you know. Which is the hellish NDE. The hellish NDEs are an experience of common perceptions of hell. Here is a report. When I reached the bottom, it resembled the entrance to a cave with what looked like webs hanging. I heard cries, wails, moans, and gnashing of teeth. I saw these beings that resembled humans with the shape of a head and body, but they were ugly and grotesque. They were frightening and sounded like they were tormented in agony. Three types of responses here to negative near-death experiences. According to a study on the after effects of near-death experiences, they often inspire psychological well-being and self-worth. Unfortunately, with distressing near-death experiences, this is not always the case. Instead, the response may look similar to post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Another study published in the journal Consciousness and Cognition found the changes in personal beliefs can be sudden and disorientating, and feeling of anger, depression, and estrangement from family and friends have been reported. Just as there are three types of negative near-death experiences, Bush and Grayson identify three different responses to negative NDEs, and they define these three responses as the turnaround, reductionism, and the long haul. With the turnaround response, an NDE takes their experiences as a message to change their ways. Interesting, isn't it? Like a bad dream. You know, I was talking about that. With the bad dreams people may have, and they wake up in the morning, the bad dream can be so intense and so real and so frightening that they wake up in a sweat in the morning or in the middle of the night and they realize it was just a bad dream. That can be enough to turn around someone, to make them make a change. And of course, movies throughout time are filled with these kinds of things, you know. You know, where people aren't doing the right thing, where they're not living the right way, where they're mean or whatever, you know. You know, the Christmas Carol ones and stuff, where they're visited by the ghosts and stuff, and then at the end they come good again. These themes are right throughout movies and content, I think, you know, where they're showing the good, the bad, and the ugly. And most of the films seem to be showing these ugliness, if we were to look at emotional feelings and love and people being together, the whole movie, like 80% of it will be this grotesque, gross-out comedy stuff and sexual, you know, very explicit sexual stuff. But at the end, the guy gets the girl and they're happy, you know, and it's sort of this kind of stuff. But in all this content, they're still showing you this stuff, you know, and I think it's always been there. So the turnaround is an interesting thing. This is the response to an NDE. It takes their experiences message to change their ways. Or as one man said, I was being shown that I had to shape up or ship out. One or the other. In other words, get your act together, and I did just that. The turnaround response often results in the person becoming religious and undergoing a moral conversion. You know, keep in mind as well, when these powerful events or NDEs happen and people do want to take that turnaround in this realm, they are again, of course, tricked by many kinds of things, like religions and things like that, you know. They might go and decide to see a psychiatrist, or many, you know, people can have a wonderful experience and turn their life completely around. Generally, most people will know the way, but there are going to be tricks when you're looking at the turnaround. And, but it's very interesting to have such a vivid and unbelievable, maybe terrifying experience during an NDE. And then being brought back to life, or coming back and saying, I've got to go this way. Some people, a lot of people do that. It just completely change. reductionism. Those that respond with reductionism brush off their experience and conclude that there are rational explanations for it. It was an hallucination, or it was just a reaction to plain or meditation. The problem with reductionism is that it does nothing to resolve the anxieties that often follow a negative NDE. And the long haul, unlike reductionism, the long haul responder seeks to understand their distressing experience. Now, this is a person who might go into this and study deeper and research this and even go on to write books, and it becomes part of their life. So, but never really comes to a conclusion of what it meant and how to integrate it into their lives. So some are so haunted by the experience they had that they don't tell anyone about it, even their own spouse. Others seek, as I said, psychotherapy, which brings no resolution if the therapist dismisses the NDE as a fantasy and prescribes medications to mask the anxiety. So I was just talking about that. People have very powerful experiences, and then they may want to change things or find answers, and then they're sucked into the psychotherapy industrial complex and the medication, because these people who work in these industries are like classic atheists. They don't, they're very cold-blooded, a lot of them. And if there's not an explanation that they can explain, then they'll give you drugs. But they don't want to know about the mysteries around us and everything that's happening. You know, that doesn't exist in their books. So it can be a complicated thing, there. So again, the turnaround, reductionism, and the long haul. So it's not about being a bad person. The experience of a hell-like place is shared by many saints and noted in Revelation. Negating the idea that bad people have negative near-death experiences and good people have positive ones. Bush and Grayson affirm this. No evidence suggests the conventional assumption that good people get pleasant NDEs and bad people have distressing ones. Saints have reported extremely disturbing NDEs, while felons and suicide attempters have encountered bliss. Distressing near-death experiences, the basics. Really interesting. What can be learned about hell, or this, that's just a name, from negative near-death experiences? The veridical evidence supporting near-death experiences urges us to believe that a transphysical component of a person exists, because patients who experience NDEs have experiences similar to actual death during an NDE, i.e. flat EEG, the absence of gag reflex and fixed and dilated pupils. We can use their reports to extract information about the afterlife. We might conclude from the correlation between medical studies of near-death experiences and Christian revelation that NDEs support Jesus' message in the New Testament: our souls live on after our bodies die, and there is a heaven and a hell. To take eject this from actual negative death experiences, we might conclude that hell is lonely, void, grotesque, tormenting, miserable, and depressing. On the other hand, we can also extract from positive NDEs that heaven is better than anything we could imagine. Heaven, hell, I think that's all state of mind. And I do think that in this death experience, possibly we could be seeing what we want to see, what encapsulated our life. It is really interesting. There's obviously a part there that needs to be gone through or navigated through, after we do pass. Some good stories here. These are five credible stories of near-death experiences, and they're peer-reviewed. Some of these are really interesting to read through and look at, and I know we have over the years. And there's so much to do with these near-death experiences, and it's such a big field to look into. But they're very common and obviously happen every second of the day, you know. For a near-death experience, obviously, to occur, one must have limited brain function, yet still have a sensory experience. Without full use of their physical senses, in the United States alone, about 9 million people have reported experiencing an NDE. The patient's reports reveal a pattern of several reoccurring elements, and these elements include, you know, out-of-body experience, accurate visual perception while out of the body, accurate auditory perception while out of the body, feelings of peace and painlessness. So they, many people are suffering through cancer and pain and things like that, just terrible in the hospitals and things, and they'll finally pass over and they've it's all gone. Light phenomena, encounter with a loving white light, life reviews, being in another world, encountering other beings, tunnel experiences, and precognition, which is the Philip K. Dick information that we talked about. So there's a few ways they can, you know, verify a report of a near-death experience story. In some cases where patients undergo clinical death and then return to physical life, they report that they maintained consciousness during the clinical death, despite the absence of the brain function. Since this clinical death often happens in a hospital setting with professional medical oversight, thousands of these near-death experiences have been very well documented for scientific study. There are three ways to verify the transphysical nature of a near-death experience: veridical reported data, visual perception of blind, and personal information about deceased individuals. Each of these kinds of evidence is verifiable by independent researchers after the fact, and all of them are exceedingly difficult, if not impossible, to explain by merely physical or physiological theories, such as hallucinations and narcotics and etc. Veridical reported data and visual perception of the blind. Frequently during near-death experiences, some transphysical component leaves the body but does not go immediately to an otherworldly domain. Instead, it remains in the resuscitation room or somewhat near the body. So some of these reports have highly unusual or unique characteristics which are not part of ordinary resuscitation or hospital procedures. Additionally, some patients blind from birth report visual data accurately about their experiences during clinical death. As such, the details of their near-death experience stories can be verified by hospital staff and others who were present at the time. When the claims of an NDE have been verified, the account is deemed veridical, and virtually every peer-reviewed study reports multiple instances of such veridical data. Personal information about deceased individuals. So many NDEers meet deceased relatives who they had never met in their own lifetime. They are only able to identify the relative later in a photo or by describing them to a living relative who knew the deceased. Really interesting. And now we're going to look at five stories of near-death experiences. Near-death experience story one, finding dentures. In a 2001 study by a renowned cardiologist, Pim van Lommel, a man who had been in a deep coma later told a nurse that he recognized her. He told her that he saw where she had placed his dentures during resuscitation efforts and then described the cart where she placed them. They were there precisely as he described it. Near-death experience two. A child meets relatives. One man who had an NDE as a child recalled the experience of meeting dead relatives. There were some presences there, and there were some ladies. I didn't know them at the time, and they were so loving and so wonderful, and I just didn't want to come back. I didn't see any pictures of them until I was an adult, but then I said, oh yeah, they were my great-grandmothers who had died years before I was born. So there you go. Near-death experience story 3, life review. Often people relay their near-death experiences as a review of their life, Through life review, experiences cannot be deemed scientifically veridical. They are worth noting. They can have a profound effect on the NDE and sometimes cause them to re-examine their life and morals. Below is a doctor's description of the life review of an NDE patient. When he realized that collision was imminent, the patient said that time seemed to slow down as he hit his brakes and went into an uncontrolled slide. Then he seemed to pop out of his body. While in this state, he had a life review which consisted of brief pictures, flashes of his life. His car struck the truck and the truck bed crashed through the window, causing multiple injuries to his head and chest. Medical reports show that he was in a coma and nearly died. Yet he had a vivid sensation of leaving his physical body and entering into darkness. He had the feeling of moving up through a dark tunnel toward a point of light. Suddenly a being filled with love and light appeared to him. Now he had a second life review, or life review proper, one guided by the being of light. He felt bathed in love and compassion as he reviewed the moral choices he had made in his lifetime, and he suddenly understood that he was an important part of the universe and that his life had a purpose. Near-death experience, story 4, traveling through walls. Some NDEers report stories of vertical out-of-body experiences, including traveling through walls to the waiting room where they see their relatives and friends. One patient reported traveling through a wall and seeing her young daughter wearing mismatched plaids, which was highly unusual. Another woman traveled through a wall and overheard her brother-in-law in the hospital waiting room talking to a business associate. Excuse me, folks. in a very derogatory manner. She was able to report this back to him later. Near-death experience, story 5. A blind woman has sight restored. As mentioned above, some blind people report being able to see during their NDE. This is an amazing thing, isn't it? Psychiatrist Brian Weiss tells the story of a blind elderly woman. She suffered a cardiac arrest during her stay in the hospital where Weiss was the chairman of the psychiatry department. She was unconscious as the resuscitation team tried to revive her. According to her later report, she floated out of her body and stood near the window, watching the resuscitation. She observed without any pain whatsoever as they thumped on her chest and pumped air into her lungs. During the resuscitation, a pen fell out of her doctor's pocket and rolled near the same window where her out-of-body spirit was standing and watching. The doctor eventually walked over and picked up the pen and put it back in his pocket. He then rejoined the frantic effort to save her. They succeeded. Isn't that a strange story? He's trying to resuscitate someone who's about to die and then he goes to get a pen. A few days later, she told her doctor that she had observed the resuscitation team at work during her cardiac arrest. No, he soothingly reassured her, "You were probably hallucinating because of the anoxia, lack of oxygen to the brain. This can happen when the heart stops beating. But I saw your pen roll over to the window," she replied. Then she described the pen and other details of the resuscitation. The doctor was shocked. His patient had not only been comatose during the resuscitation, but she had also been blind for many years. And what can these near-death experience stories tell us about consciousness and the afterlife? And even God. The above studies of near-death experiences give considerable probative evidence of transphysical consciousness after bodily death, which is not explained by current any current explanations in the medical field and science and all of this. They can't really explain it, can they? And is unlikely to be presented by future ones. It's just one of those things that goes along, doesn't it? And nor can it be explained by the medical world. This challenges certain ideas of consciousness. These features and the occurrence of heightened mental functioning when the brain is severely impaired, such as under general anesthesia and in cardiac arrest, challenge the common assumption in neuroscience that consciousness is solely the product of brain process, or that the mind is merely the subjective concomitant of neurological events. Dr. Bryce Grayson of the University of Virginia School of Medicine. So there is a growing body of legitimate research around near-death experience reports and peer-reviewed scientific journals, having published a number of actual medical studies on the subject. Verified NDE stories provide evidence that the soul does indeed continue beyond death. Isn't this amazing? This is an amazing thing when you think about it. It goes on. And I think I saved a recent one. Yeah, this was just from, you know, like kind of a UK sort of papers that just popped up the other day right in front of me. I don't know why it came up, so I thought I would save it. You know, the Sun or one of those kinds of things. It was actually published on January the 1st, 2023. What dying really feels like, according to survivors of near-death experiences. What happens after death remains a mystery, but survivors of near-death experiences have now given a fascinating insight into what we might expect when the time comes. Mail Online spoke to people who've been on the brink to find out exactly what they saw, felt, and heard. Examples including feeling like they were looking down at their dying body and recognizing surgeons from when they were supposedly unconscious. Dr. Sam Parnia, a British critical care expert at New York Medical Center, NYU, Langone Health, has been studying the exact moment a person dies for 25 years. He told Mail Online these are often called near-death experiences, but that recorded experiences of death is a more accurate phrase, as the person has actually been in death. The reality is that you can die, be dead, and then be brought back to life again. So therefore, what happens is these people are having a real death experience, the doctor explained. On what people think and feel while in death, Dr. Parnia said, you start to travel to a place that you recognize as being home. And we call it home because it means it's somewhere you thought that you belong. So you're only going back there. That's interesting, isn't it? This could be why, you know, a lot of people long for something else or feel like they belong somewhere else and they feel like they don't belong here in this life or anything, that you feel like this isn't really it. This is just some kind of experience that I'm having, that I'm, that, you know, that there's somewhere greater that I belong to, that I have to go back to. This is, I guess, why a lot of people travel the world to find themselves, don't they? They travel the whole world in order to try and seek out or find themselves in some way and fill in those missing pieces. But perhaps, you know, this is what's going on. And so very interesting. In that state, they relive their lives and they reevaluate everything. It is often misrepresented as your life flashing before you, but it's a deep, conscious, purposeful meaning revelation. If you cause pain to people, you relive their exact pain. If you did something that helped someone, you feel that joy. Duncan Seth Smith, I remember floating on a hill. Duncan Seth Smith, 67, from Lincolnshire, has a vivid memory of floating over a hill when he suffered a cardiac arrest on Boxing Day 2005. Mr. Seth Smith, age 50 at the time, recalled hearing doctors getting the defibrillator ready while unconscious in hospital, with one saying, again, as he got zapped. He was in the ICU for 4 days, and just before being allowed home, he felt dizzy and collapsed, needing CPR again after suffering another cardiac arrest. Recalling his second ordeal, Mr. Seth Smith said, "I have a vivid memory of floating over a local hill and looking down at people sledging. It was a local country hillside, but not known for sledging and not somewhere I had spent any time apart from driving by. At the time of the cardiac arrest, there was no snow about. I woke up in bed with a cut face where I had hit a trolley bed when I passed out. The nurses said it took 3 defibrillator shocks to get my heart started and the rhythm back. That is all I can remember apart from asking my wife if it was snowing, to which she replied no. Mr. Seth Smith had 3 shocks from a defibrillator and later had an implantable cardioverter defibrillator ICD fitted. Defibrillator. And wow. Martin Holloway, I had visions while in surgery. Martin Holloway from Colchester ended up needing 70 centimetres of his bowel removed in 2019 after being rushed to hospital, severely ill. The 64-year-old's wife was told to get his relatives to hospital to prepare to say their final words. While on the verge of death and having surgery, Mr. Holloway recalled what he described as visions of remembrances of what was happening in the operating room. When he awoke from the operation, the surgeon told him, "You won't recognize me," but he told her that he did. The warehouse operations manager said he knew her name, remembered her standing beside him, looking at him and others around the room and talking to other doctors. Mr. Holloway said it scared the hell out of her because she was worried he had been awake during the surgery. He added, she asked, "How do you know?" And I said that I kind of remembered her being there, but she didn't take it any further at the time. I knew where I had been and recognized her, but had never seen her before. Mr. Holloway added, "I thought the visions were my imagination under the drugs for the pain, but after waking up and recognizing her, I wasn't so sure." There's a picture of Mr. Holloway taken to the hospital with blood clots and heart failure and colon issues in 2019. Kevin Curtis, I was zooming up from a dark place after being stung by bees multiple times in the face and neck 21 years ago. Then 50-year-old Kevin Curtis was rushed to hospital. Mr. Curtis, now 71, was suffering from anaphylaxis and was unconscious but aware of my surroundings. His blood pressure had drastically plunged, and he heard a medic say if they did not get an EpiPen soon, he would most likely die. During the ambulance ride to the hospital, Mr. Curtis of Lincolnville, Maine, recalls seeing an inviting bright light off to one side before sensing the vehicle had pulled over. The grandfather of 2 said he could hear the paramedics discussing his imminent demise, then felt the pain on and about my face when being removed from the ambulance. Mr. Curtis, a retired financial information architect, described the sensation as zooming up from a dark place, cool area, back to reality. Serene, non-threatening, some sort of out-of-body calm. Love is the best I can describe the overall moment. As a result, I have no fear per se of death, he added. I do worry about the path to getting to that place, but death itself does not seem as frightening as an end. I do not know what was on the other side of the light or what thoughts I would continue to be able to have for how long, but it was not a place to be fearful of going. Caroline Graceline was, I was in the air looking down on myself. Caroline was 19 when she nearly died after going through the windscreen of a car. As medics in ANU treated her, Mrs. Gaiseline said she had a weird sensation of looking down on herself. She said, "I seemed to be up in the air, looking down. I thought to myself, wow, this is so weird." The overriding factor was the most amazing sense of calm and serenity and the feeling of pure joy. Mrs. Gaiseline, who also sometimes talks about her experience on TikTok, realized that she would have to go back. She wasn't happy about having to go back to her body, as she knew she would be in pain and be facing a lengthy healing process. She added, "I started to argue the point and saying over and over, I don't want to go back, I don't want the pain. The next thing I knew, the nurse was rubbing my arm and saying to me, 'Don't worry, love, we'll give you something for the pain.'" Dave Brown, "The world was shrinking around me." Dave Brown from South Florida had three near-death experiences in one day when he was in his late 40s. Mr. Brown, now 61, was painting his living room ceiling when he started to feel faint. Managing to call 911, paramedics got to him within minutes to find his heart racing out of control. His heart then stopped and the medic started CPR to get his heart back beating at a normal rhythm, but minutes later it stopped again. The electrical engineer said, "An amazing peace came over me. No pain, no panic. I recall thinking, this is it, all there is. But suddenly they shocked me back and I recall a scene of commotion as they readied me for transport." His heart stopped for a third time while in the driveway as paramedics prepared to take him to hospital. Referencing this moment, he said, "I recall a tremendous peace, almost hard to describe, but like the world was shrinking in around me, very quiet. I recall my father, who had been dead about 5 years then. He said nothing, but I recall his presence. I remember the specific thought, this is all good. No sadness or regret, nor any pain, just the feeling of lightness. It is perhaps the hardest feeling to explain, as there really is nothing in life otherwise to explain it. I get choked up thinking about it to this day." Mr. Brown said he is a practical person by nature, not religious then, nor now, but the experience gave him a personal faith. Very interesting. These are just some, you know, of the stories that you hear, and you can't discount it, can you? As there's just so many. Looking at another article through the Nexus news feed, which was from the Pulse, I think. This was a 57-year-old unconscious dead man describes his resuscitation as if he was watching it. So, researchers at the University of Southampton spent 4 years studying more than 2,000 people who suffered cardiac arrest. They gathered data from 15 different hospitals from the UK, US and Austria. One remarkable story came from a 57-year-old man who, despite being unconscious and dead, recalled watching the entire process of his resuscitation. he is one of multiple people who described details that should have been impossible to describe. With so many interesting cases that warrant further study, will academia ever be fully open to study phenomenon that challenges long-held belief systems? Is protecting against phenomenon that is associated with superstition and spiritualism and magic more important than encouraging scientific exploration? It's an interesting case. Let me see if I can find the real link anyway. I think I did save it. Yeah. Don't mind me, folks. Yeah. Researchers at the University of Southampton spent 4 years studying more than 2,000 people who suffered cardiac arrest. They gathered data from 15 different hospitals from the UK, US and Austria. This study was conducted in 2014. And there's a study there. They found that nearly 40% of people who survived described some type of awareness during the time they were actually pronounced clinically dead before their hearts were restarted. One remarkable story came from a 57-year-old man who, despite being unconscious and dead, recalled watching the entire process of his resuscitation. So, think about how unbelievable this is, like, for someone who's witnessing that. I've seen a few of these bunches of them. You know, not long ago, a guy got hit out front of... got hit by a car at peak hour traffic, you know, in the late afternoon, right out from in front of where I was living. And I just stumbled out there, and yeah, the whole road was blocked off, and the ambulance was were there. Is a big guy, and he died, but they had him on the sidewalk, and they were pounding his chest. It was almost hard to watch, you know. Boom, boom, they're pounding and pounding and pounding for so long on his chest, and he was such a big guy with a lot of weight on him, and the rippling out of the skin and everything, and the pushing into the chest and the noises, the thumping, it was unbelievable. And I was just sitting, I remember sitting on a wall just kind of watching this, and there's people just watching to see if they could bring him back to life, you know. And you know, never would you think as a witness watching this kind of experience where someone's getting worked on like this on the pavement, on the side of a highway or a road after they've been struck by a car, and the ambulances are there and the police are there and the flashing lights and that, you know, and they're on this and they're getting this work done. You would never think that possibly this person, their consciousness is actually around that area watching that take place just as you are. Just as you're watching. So in that way, we could put ourselves in the position of the consciousness of that person who's being worked on. And that we're kind of watching this situation take place. It's really interesting to look at it like that anyway. According to the authors in a release by the University of Southampton, the recalled experience surrounding death merits a genuine investigation without prejudice. We know the brain can't function when the heart has stopped beating, but in this case, conscious awareness appears to have continued for up to 3 minutes into the period when the heart wasn't beating. Even though the brain typically shuts down within 20 to 30 seconds after the heart has stopped, the man described everything that had happened in the room. But importantly, he heard two bleeps from a machine that makes a noise at 3 minute intervals, so we could time how long the experience lasted for. He seemed very credible, and everything that he said had happened to him had actually happened. This is significant, since it has often been assumed that experiences in relation to death are likely hallucinations or illusions occurring either before the heart stops or after the heart has been successfully restarted, but not an experience corresponding with real events when the heart isn't beating. Many people describe very specific details of what happened to them during cardiac arrest. They describe conversations people had, clothes people wore, events that went on 10, 20 minutes into resuscitation, where certain people are located in a room, for example, and what they're doing. This is not compatible with brain activity. It may be that some people receive better quality resuscitation, and that though there's no evidence to support it, they did have brain activity, or it could indicate that human consciousness, the psyche, the soul, the self, continued to function. You know, outside of this situation is what we'd be looking at, like I said, with the guy who got hit by the car, you know. It's like a knocking, isn't it? You get knocked unconscious, and then you're in this situation where they're trying to bring you back, but this other part of you almost gets knocked out of you, and it's just sitting there watching, you know. When you die, there's no blood flow going into your brain. If it goes below a certain level, you can't have electrical activity. It takes a long lot of imagination to think there's somehow a hidden area of your brain that comes into action when everything else isn't working, Dr. Sam Parnia. Of approximately 2,000 cardiac arrest patients, a staggering 330 survived and 140 experienced some type of awareness during the time they were clinically dead and being resuscitated. Estimates have suggested that millions of people have had vivid experiences in relation to death, but the scientific evidence has been ambiguous at best. These experiences warrant further investigations. These observations raise a question about our current concept of how brain and mind interact. The historical idea is that electrochemical processes in the brain lead to consciousness. That may no longer be correct because we can demonstrate that those processes don't go on after death. There may be something in the brain we haven't discovered that accounts for consciousness, or it may be that consciousness is a separate entity from the brain. All we can say now is that the data suggests that consciousness is not annihilated. Dr. Sam Parnia, so as we say, consciousness, we are a reflection of our consciousness, a projection. So the consciousness is around us like a field, you know. And when we die, that consciousness takes flight. The evidence of some type of awareness or consciousness existing separate from the body is actually quite compelling. When I write about NDE research, I'm often reminded of remote viewing, especially in the case of 57-year-old man mentioned above who described watching his recitation. Remote viewing is the ability to describe a remote geographical location in detail, regardless of one's present location and proximity to the place or object that they are describing. The phenomenon is indeed real, so real that it was used by US intelligence community to spy on others, albeit in a psychic manner. You can learn a bit more about that, and we have a lot of interesting podcasts with that, indeed, don't we? And I think Scott will be covering a lot of this kind of stuff. So interesting, remote neural monitoring, remote viewing, and this kind of thing, and how the USA, for example, intelligence agencies are using this and what they're actually doing here. You know, because there's a natural psychic ability that we have, but there's this artificial kind of thing that they're doing using technology and stuff and other ways. Because everything's bended and inverted. Intelligence communities, you know, And, you know, they're using these techniques to spy on people in the community and stalk them and things like that in a psychic manner. So that's really interesting, and I'm sure we'll be covering more of that, as Scott has as well, probably better than anyone that I've ever spoken to has covered this. And I know Scott's next podcasts are going to be very deeply embedded in this, so it's going to be really interesting to hear those. this talks about a video. It's a video of Dr. Eben Alexander, a Harvard-trained brain neurosurgeon for more than two decades. He is also the author of the best-selling book Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. In the book, he looks at the past 2.5 years of his life spent in trying to reconcile his rich spiritual experience with contemporary physics and cosmology. He is convinced that his spiritual experience is totally consistent with the leading edges of scientific understanding today. Dr. Alexander never believed in the existence of an afterlife or the soul. That all changed when he was in a coma for 7 days caused by severe bacterial meningitis, and claimed he had a memorable journey into the afterlife. After all of these legitimate experiences and proof of something more, or are they simply just hallucinations created by our own biology? There's some lectures here and quotes. There are a lot of scientists around the world who realize that when you start getting into the mystery of consciousness, which in essence is the only thing any one of us truly knows exists, and trying to see exactly what consciousness is, it's kind of like asking a fish what it's like in the water. We are so close to it that there's no way to really separate it out. I assure you that the only thing you've ever really known is your own consciousness. We believe that there is this external world out there, the material realm. That's the realm that materialist science will try to tell you is the thing that exists. But it's really right at the heart of the deep enigma of quantum mechanics that our modern society has wrestled with for more than a century now, trying to understand. Basically, what the results of those experiments have been screaming is that consciousness is primary and fundamental in this universe, and that is a very important thing to understand. That's an interesting one, isn't it, on that particular case anyway. Okay, so these are the newer ones. These are the newer ones. Christopher Copes. Messages from the light, near-death experiences, and communication from the other side. The closest contact with our afterlife is when we have a near-death experience. More and more people report such an experience, the reason being that medical science gets better every day. We are more capable of to bring back to life a growing number of people who go through a critical medical situation, but also without a critical medical situation, people can have NDE. What messages do near-death experiences, NDEs, get out of this? And what messages can non-experiences get out of it? A lot, I can assure you, and these messages are extremely valuable. When we learn to understand them, they can lead to a much better and more rewarding life. NDEs are extraordinary experiences. They overwhelm those who have had them, and their lives completely change. They are absolutely convinced these experiences are real. Many even assert they are more real than everyday life. This is the Matrix theme, isn't it? What if you had a dream that was so real, but you couldn't wake up from that dream? How would you know the difference between the dream world and the real world. You know, it's so true, isn't it? Sometimes I really don't know the difference. And this is the thing with a lot of us, you know, in the truther community, a lot of us feel like we're walking. I've always been like that. You would not believe how many jobs I've lost and how many people have hated me and picked on me and being aggravated and annoyed at me because I seem like I'm, in a daze or a dream world. And you just can't fit into a modern society like that, and that's why I never fit in, and that's why I got kicked out of school, and nothing ever worked like that, you know, because I just didn't fit in. I tried to work in places, and I was staring at the ceiling, and it can be dangerous, and I know, it's, I've got my head in the clouds all the time. Sometimes I don't know what's real. Is this real, what I'm doing now, or is when I go to sleep real? I mean, it is a strange thing when you kind of grow up not feeling that you belong anywhere and not knowing how to fit in. It's a strange concept, and it's hard to make it work in a society that runs like a machine, you know, and all the people around, they're just a reflection of that machine. They're like a hive mind. They're controlled by the machine. They do what it says. They think exactly the same way, you know. And if you don't, you get problems. And a lot of people are like that. And moving on, leading on, this is because their awareness grows tremendously. They seem to become awareness themselves. They can sense everything there is to sense. All knowledge is freely available to them, and they just need to tap into it. Every question is answered immediately. On top of all this, there appear to be no physical limitations, and neither does time form a limitation. It doesn't exist, or rather exists all at the same time. This is another interesting concept, isn't it? Time, man-made time, how it's a structure of control. How, you know, what 9 o'clock, I've got to be at this meeting, I've got to wake up at this time, I've got to do that, you know. And as I've said, you know, if you look around at nature, if you look at a, you know, 500-year-old tree or a glacier that's been there for thousands of years, or you look at the stars above, you know, I mean, if you look at stuff, it doesn't seem to have any time, you know. And then it got me thinking, you know, like, can you put numbers to it, you know, like, you know, what is an example of time without, when you take away the numbers, how can you explain it, you know? It's not really possible, is it? I mean, you look at man-made time and how we wear watches and our phones and we wake up without time and everything. That's the problem that I've always had. It even gets me trouble with my own wife and stuff and everyone around me. Everyone runs off time, and I don't blame them. I understand, because you come off as a selfish and stupid person when you're not obeying the time. I can't go to a job interview late. I won't get the job. You know, I can't turn up to work late. People rely on you to be there on time, you know, and I feel like it's a really interesting concept, you know. How we're all embedded in time, you know. And you get cast out as instantly as a bad person if you're not on time. You know, and everyone's wearing these Fit watches now and Apple watches and everything, you know. Have you seen these Fit watches things they wear? Wearing these Fit things and these little bands on their arm that are time, you know. You see the news, boom, 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 right on 6 o'clock. You know, when you're driving in your car and you've got the radio on, every hour, on the second, boom, 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 the news. That's to keep us structured and locked in this time. And I have always had a problem with that, and it's made me others view me as this uncaring or lazy person or something sometimes. But if it's not, I don't mean it. I just I get funny with it, you know. I just question these things. It's really always been a very big challenge for me to fit into modern society, and that means everything. That means everything. Because I know I've got to do things, and I've got to do certain things, and I am to live my life here. Otherwise, I'm going to upset people. Now, I don't want to do that. But this whole time concept has always got to me. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. I'll meet you at 12 o'clock. I've got to be here at this time. I've got to get up at 6 a.m. What the fuck does it mean? It's a bunch of fucking numbers made up by a bunch of fucking Satanists. I don't think it has anything to do with our natural way of being, a natural law. But being here in this realm, we have to comply. Otherwise, you get really severely fucked over if you don't. If you know, it's like a machine going around. You know what I mean? And if you don't obey the time, it's like throwing something like a pencil or something into a rotating fan, and it just gets boom, and it hits the roof. You know, that's you. If you, you know, it's like this time is whizzing and whizzing around, and everyone's in it. Like mice in an experiment, you know, zipping around, you know. It's such a crazy thing. The most overwhelming aspect of their experience is that NDEs feel they are immersed in the most wonderful feeling of peace, acceptance, and unconditional love. This is interesting too, isn't it, considering that we live in a realm of complete fear. And nobody can tell me that this system, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it around us, isn't using fear to control us. Come on, man. I don't care what anyone says. This system is using fear to control human beings. And it's obviously about love, isn't it? It's very interesting. The dark side and the light side, the good and the bad, the love and the hate and the fear. Fear, love. It's, I mean, that really, light is love and fear is dark. It really explains everything, especially the unconditional nature of the love they feel is something that leaves a lasting impression on the NDE-er. Near-death experience person. Because just think of what it means. Unconditional love means that there are no conditions to be met in order to receive this love. We don't have to do anything specific in order to get it. In addition, the love that is felt is indescribable due to its completeness and all-embracing aspect. Many near-death experienced people describe it as follows: when I would add all the love I had received throughout my life together, it would still be a fraction of what I felt there in that NDE experience. Many NDEs feel that what they have experienced is their true home. They are sure that it is where they originate from. Isn't this interesting? And they know they belong there. They are also convinced this home is where we will eventually all go back to when we die. Isn't this interesting? Feeling like a fish out of water, perhaps. Feeling like you're in an uncomfortable suit. Feeling like you're in the wrong car. You know, this can be all experiences that we have. But going back, what we are talking about here is the perfect setting. This apparently means that the moment we are born, we acquire the right to return to this wonderful place. It is our birthright. As a consequence, their fear of death completely disappears. All of this seems too good to be true, actually. There is a slight problem, because NDEers start to long to return back to that place again. This is why they often become seriously homesick after their near-death experience. On average, it takes about 7 years for an NDEer to settle with the idea they are here and not there. And there is a purpose to it. So having the experience has its little drawbacks. No. Except for the good news that there is a wonderful place where we will all go to. There is also a bit of other news. It needs to be acknowledged that a non-negligible number of people have experienced a completely blissful NDE, and some people have even experienced terrifying NDEs, which is what we started off the podcast today with. At this moment, it still isn't clear what causes this kind of NDE, apart from the problem we have in defining bad and good. There is no way we can assert that terrifying NDEs are there only for bad people, and positive ones only for good people. And this is the problem with modern religions, isn't it? Because if you're a bad person, you're going to a fiery hell with Satan, and if you're a good person, you go up to the pearly gates and you go into heaven with God. No. This is not true. Now, are these experiences not just the result of lack of oxygen or some chemical reactions and neurological processes in the brains of a dying patient? This is brought up all the time. Is there something going on with the brain when people are in this death experience and having these experiences, you know, that explains all of this? Good scientific so-called prospective research indicates this is not the case. In this kind of research, a specific procedure was followed to create an objective pool of people who had experienced a cardiac arrest. A number of people from that pool turned out to have had an NDE. These people could then be compared with the people of the same pool that didn't have one. Differences between both groups would be interesting because they could give an indication of what causes NDEs. This kind of research was conducted in different countries throughout the world over a long time, and in none of these did the researchers find any significant differences between the two groups. For instance, no differences were found with respect to physiological changes in the brain, because people from both groups had a loss of oxygen and had brain cells dying. This means these factors cannot be the cause for NDEs, something that has often been asserted. In some research, pharmacological factors, drug treatments during resuscitation and psychological reactions to approaching death were investigated, but neither could these factors explain NDEs. The light. From a scientific point of view, it is still to be determined what really causes NDEs. But for me, it is clear these experiences truly are the first step into heaven, or however you want to call it. I have several reasons to believe this. One of them is the light that some NDEers get into contact with. Like everything else in an NDE, light is something NDEers find very difficult to describe. It communicates as if it is some kind of intelligent being. But then again, there are NDEers who find themselves to be part of this light. The light is often described as the center of all unconditional love. In the presence of the light, some NDEers have their life review, which to me is a second reason to believe in NDE experiences, that they're true. They see their life as a film, but in fast-forward mode, or they just see pictures. Some describe their life review as a stream of memories. The overall feeling was something like this is you. This is like a dream, isn't it? And when you go to sleep, you have these dreams, and it's so real. It's like a film, isn't it? I mean, where does this come from? Interestingly, the life review can be extremely detailed. The smallest details of our life are still there and we are able to relive them. Moreover, we can relive these details in a very peculiar way. We can feel our life from our own point of view, but also from the viewpoint of everyone else. It means that we are able to feel what we did to others as if we are those others. In this way, we can feel the wonderful things we did to others, but also the less optimal things. The remarkable thing is that there is no judgment. The light doesn't judge us, nor does anyone else. If there is anyone judging us, it is ourselves. An NDE has said that the life review seems not to be a matter of wrong or right, but a matter of becoming conscious of what happened and how we chose between the many options we get in life. Unity Universe, this is very direct kind of feeling of what others felt in extraordinary and in a way unearthly, is extraordinary and unearthly. It can only be possible when there is a profound interconnectedness between all people. Even without life review, NDEers say they experienced a very deep connection with others, with nature and even the light. This interconnection is so complete that one could even conclude that, in fact, I am you, and you are me, and we are nature. There is no difference. NDEers feel we all have a particle of the light within us, which actually means that we all participate in the light. And to briefly come back to people who had a distressing NDE, the light is also within them, and they will also have the possibility to return home to where the light is. A full separation from the light is utterly impossible, because we all are and will always be an indispensable part of it. This is interesting. When we look at what's happening to people now, you know, and these inoculations, these jabs, you know, and stuff. I don't think they can take our soul, folks. I don't think so. But I think they're trying to interfere. I think they're trying to interfere. And, you know, turn people into, or merge people with, obviously, technology, you know. And then over time, as we become embedded in this technology, we slowly forget, don't we? I mean, you look at the phone as a classic example of that. You know, you look at most people now walking around and they're on their phones, you know. They're being drawn into this technological state or future. And at this point, when that arrives, you know, they just won't remember who they really were or who they really are. You know, and it's going to be a very, very big struggle to get back to that, to get back to those feelings, to reconnect with those feelings, you know. And this, to me, is what transhumanism means. I don't think transhumanism is about, I, you know, the whole Hollywood thing of transferring your consciousness into an artificial character, or carrier, I don't buy it, because I don't think that can ever happen. And I think if we believe that that can happen, I think that that is fear-based, mind control, and I think that isn't going to help us. I don't think they can take our souls. That is my honest opinion of it. I don't think so now. After many, many years of my own research and looking at all of this, I don't think they can take our souls. But whatever they're injecting into people and whatever technology is going on, this is bodily stuff. And I think this is about trying to control people like puppets. You know, definitely they're trying to get close. But I don't think they'll ever get to that. I don't think, because I think I believe the consciousness, our true awareness and who we really are, is an energy field around us. And I think this body is, as we said, just a reflection, a carrier, a projection of, of our consciousness. And I think this system is attacking that like a parasite. You know, these parasitic entities, they're attacking this system, trying to control it. And the interesting thing to look at here is if they can control that bodily entity, you know, that we have, that we display from our consciousness, you know, are they trying to steal that away from the consciousness that is consciousness itself? So to control that body, that vehicle, if you will, to take it away and control it for maybe an unlimited amount of time. And so it will not be able to remember its way back to who it really is. Maybe they're trying to cut, you know, to interfere with that connection there. It's hard to say. When we consider this profound interconnection, and also remember the other aspects of NDEs, such as tremendous awareness, limitless, and freely available knowledge, no physical or time constraints. We can only conclude that we are part of one unity universe, right? No lesser souls. There is more good news. Since we are all interconnected and all carry the light within us, we are all important. There are no lesser souls. No one is more than another. God wants the best for us, more than we can ever dare to dream of. But he wants the best for all of us. He doesn't draw boundaries. God is also freedom. We pose restrictions on ourselves. We make prisons in our own head. We even allow others to make prisons in our own head by accepting the restrictions they pose upon us. How important is that to think about, folks? Think about the media and governments and the whole system around us. How this system imposes itself, you know, on us. And we allow them to, you know, we allow them to do this. And by doing that, we draw into existence our own prisons, encapsulating our own minds. But we're doing it to ourselves. Anyway, our importance is not only based on us partaking in the light, but also because we all have an important task to fulfill while here on Earth. As one NDE put it, no one would be here unless we have a task, right? The exact task is unknown. NDEs who return to their body are unable to recall what that task is. They are unable to take with them all the knowledge that seems so freely available during their experience. It simply is too much and too elaborate to hold on to. Moreover, our physical body and brain are inadequate to take it all in. Only a few people were able to remember what their task is, but the majority only knows they are here for a purpose, right? Creative power. One task that NDEs seem to agree on is to learn about love. We do that in a world limited by time and space, where we have to make our choices. Many NDEs will agree we have a free will and we are free to choose our way through our world. But since we are part of a unity universe, our interconnectedness makes that everything we do has an effect somewhere else. All our actions, even the seemingly insignificant ones, ripple through the universe. They have an effect. They do something. They create. Actually, we create. We have a creative power through what we do and think. Everything I do has influence on everything. Nothing is lost. It is a kind of law of conservation of energy. That is why we shouldn't do to others what we don't want for ourselves. Moreover, what we send will attract. Thoughts have wings, huh? We should also be mindful of our thoughts, because we create with our thoughts. This is where they're getting us. People can't see it, man. It's really unbelievable, eh? Kids brought up on TV, you know? If you wanted to control a planet of people and you didn't want them to know that you were doing it, what's the best way that you could do it? Fucking TV. TV. What a way. What a fucking way. What an unbelievable and incredible and diabolical device. But you know what? It's okay. If you've got a TV, it's okay. If you know and you're aware of it, it just becomes a plastic bit of black shit on the wall. You know what I mean? Awareness is the key, man. When you look at it, you're like, pfft. But there you go. Through our choices, we learn about love from life reviews. We know what we always have, that we always have many options in life. Pathways, roads, highways. And the more difficulties we have in life, the more interesting the options become that we can choose from. It seems to be very beneficiary when we would choose for those options that bring love and peace. This means that it is best to act in accordance with our inner core, which is our particle of the light. When we do that, we create positive ripples that travel through the universe. They have a soothing, healing, and energizing and or inspiring effect somewhere. And it is bound to return to us in some other form. These are the much needed changes. In the last few decades, we used our freedom of choice to pursue only our short-term self-interest. We were indifferent to other people's suffering and indifferent to the suffering of nature. By doing that, we created an I don't care about you society. Our system is primarily focused on our own financial wealth. There is little place for spiritual wealth. Many people have even started to believe that greed is God. And there are too many who think it is perfectly acceptable to cheat other people with the only intention of benefiting themselves. Well, this is the media, isn't it? And the governments and the whole system around us. And then that reflects onto everybody who buys into it. So it's such a hard game. You know, it's such a hard game that we are playing now, that we are at this point. It is an amazing thing. So somehow we have acquired the idea that we are not interconnected and that we are immune for the consequences of our actions. The negative ripples we create have backfired at us through the Great Recession, which still affects especially the US, Europe, and Japan. We in fact created this ourselves. One NDEer explicitly told me that the crisis was based on the combination of greed and indifference. And this is what the system, because we have to look at a parasitic system here that is controlling this planet and everyone on it, is creating this interference, you know, and infighting. And another experiencer had a clear warning because she says that our extreme self-interest also has to do with how we treat nature. The credit crisis is really just the tip of the iceberg. Our greed is bringing disorder to the whole system of Earth. So in this way, if you read this, we're doing it to ourselves. So very interesting. Align with the light. How do we become aligned? Praying and meditating to get closer to the light is okay, but not everyone wants to pray or is able to meditate. Fortunately, both are not necessary. It can be much easier than praying or meditating. Remember, the light is very close by. Actually, it is part of us. It is within us. We don't have to go out and search for it, folks. We don't have to go and look for it. You are it. All the mysteries of the universe, all the questions that you have, it's all in you. And we are being distracted away from this. Minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, year by year, decade after decade, this system that we have actually created. And we'll get into this more later, through our negativity, which is the balance. And this is the game that we must learn. It's there for a reason. It's constantly trying to distract us away from who we really are. And we look at government. We look at media, we look at the Vatican, we look at all this, we look at the churches, we look at the system around us. We're always, always being told and brainwashed into believing that we have to look elsewhere and outside ourselves to find guidance and true spiritual awareness. And when that happens, we're casting away from where we really need to be. Everything that you need is in you. This is the trick that the system is using. It's an incredible distraction. And it's amazing how they're using people to do this to themselves. And how you can become aware. What do we think about these people who are being used by the system to distract us within the system? Is that what they're going to do? Is that how they're going to waste their lives away? I mean, are they real? I mean, when you're watching all these TV shows and Hollywood movies and constant TV shows and stuff, I mean, what are these people? Are they actually human? What are we actually really seeing here? If you look at the media, it's just constant. It's just fake. It's constantly going. It's just absolute fakery. The whole thing. It never ends. Everything that they display to us is just fake. The thing is that it amazes me that human beings are being used by this beast system that perhaps we have all created as a test, as some kind of test, you know, that they're being used. And why is that? And we're aware of it in like right now, and they don't seem to be. It's really interesting, isn't it? These actors in the media and these people up there playing these roles reading the news and everything, and they're human like us, but they don't seem to get it. They don't seem to see any of this. It's weird. But as I said, you know, and I've got some, it's probably going to be a long one, but I've got some cards to just chat through anyway on the next podcast. They're just some cards I kept. It's interesting. It's really interesting. But, you know, this is the thing, isn't it? Meditation and traveling and going to India and the gods and the Bibles and the churches. I was in a big cathedral over Christmas time in the city. We went to the park there, and I just had to walk through, you know. It's just so incredible. The architecture and the the glass and the... And I've been overseas as well. I've been overseas and I went overseas a bunch of times. And one time I was in Ecuador. I stayed there for about 3 months. And I stayed in Quito. But I stayed in Old Quito City. It's UNESCO World Heritage listed. Not in the new part where all the backpackers stay. I never forget being up early one morning and this guy looked at me and cut his throat with his finger and he pointed at me. So it's a dangerous place. It's a dangerous place. I got robbed and it's not a place for tourists to stay at night, but I couldn't help it. Anyway, I was traveled around there and I went to these, you know, these World Heritage kind of listed churches in Old Quito City, you know, in Ecuador, in these massive cathedrals. These churches are just ginormous. You can't imagine how big they are. And I was filled with such dread. I was filled with such dread from these places. You know, I couldn't believe it. And when I went to the Sydney one over Christmas and I walked through it and there was people just sitting there and being quiet and everything. It's nice. It's a place for people to go and everything. And I was just looking at the architecture of this place inside and the incredible coloured windows and imprints and everything on there and just the way it was. And I thought, if you want people to believe, and I mean really, really deeply believe in a lie, then you've got to make that lie a really fucking good one. You know, a really, really good one. And I mean the best ever. I mean, this has got to be the best ever. But when you think about it, why do I need to go to these places to find myself or, you know, or do any of that? Shouldn't it just be simple? No? I mean, shouldn't it all just be really, really simple? I mean, aren't I it? I mean, isn't that it? Isn't it all just about awareness? And that's what really struck me like a lightning bolt. They've got to create these big churches and these big places, these massive places with all this razzmatazz and all the statues and all this stuff where you just, you're on the street as a peasant and you look up at it and you're like, wow, look at that. Look at that. That's where my soul is. I've got to go in there, you know. Doesn't it make sense that this... that this would be set up to entrap you, you know? Because I don't think so. I don't think you need all that. I think all the answers are within ourselves. You know, I think we're already everything we need to be. I think we've just got to recognize and understand that. And I'm just saying, you know, I look at these big churches and I've been and I've seen them, you know, and I know they're in Italy and everywhere and all around the world and all around the planet they have these magnificent structures and these churches are just absolutely incredible. You know? It's like, why do you need something so big and elaborate if, you know, what we have is just so simple, you know? Why do you have to sell it to us? And why do we have to buy into something if we already have it, you know? It should be just, we don't need to do any of that. We should just live our lives and it's all done, right? And that's what we're going to get into on the next podcast a little bit as I keep looking through this. And the light and what we are and everything. I'm going to continue looking into this and just breaking it down. This is reading and observation kind of podcast, that's all. So I'm just reading through things that I find interesting and I'm just observing and I'm just having a conversation. I'm offering my thoughts, my two cents, that's all. So it's an observation and reading thing for some of the members who get into the members area and might like these kinds of podcasts and content. That's all it is. But it is a really interesting thing, isn't it? So I'm going to be moving on this and having a look at it a little bit more, because these experiences that people are having are too important to ignore. And this thing, you know, this whole thing, you know, I mean, what we get in the media and what we get in the movies in Hollywood is they demonize the afterlife experience. The death experience is purely demonized, with demons and death and hell and all this stuff. They do that, you know. They make us think bad thoughts. This system, it makes us think bad thoughts and terrible things and everything, and it shows us terrible content, you know. You know, and it makes us think, and it makes us scared of death, when death really, what is it? Now, I mean, if what I am now in my body is just an experience, but when my body dies, when I pass on into this afterlife experience, if that is actually me, and that's the real me, and that's my real life, then why would I worry about dying here? But the system seems to want to keep us so bogged down and scared. And what I do note is that in Hollywood movies, and I could do podcasts and podcasts on this, how they demonize the death experience and make us scared of it. It really is interesting. Even the death experience itself, when we bury people, we've talked many times about this, scares people, because they think that they're in that hole being buried, and they're not. It's a weird thing, and everyone wears black with the black umbrellas. It's always raining in the movies, and it's always the thunder, and everyone's mourning and crying when someone dies, physically dies, and we just cry because we love them. But our emotions are misdirected and misguided because we have been manipulated, perhaps. Perhaps we should be celebrating their death and saying, we'll see you soon. I don't know. We have been trained as humans to see death as this terrible thing and upsetting thing, and we all have to go in black and retreat, and often people die in our lives and we get so upset, and people turn to drugs and drinking, and they eventually exterminate themselves because of this. Because we're not in control of our emotions, perhaps we're just not learning the real reasons as to what's really going on here. You know, it's a very interesting thing to keep talking about, because it's going to happen to us all. You know, and it's interesting here that, you know, this light, as it's said, this light is very close by. Actually, it's part of us. It's within us. And if every day we realize that, and that we are actually part of this light, and that we are moving through this light, and that we are profoundly and deeply connected with this and everyone around us, and this, you know, maybe this would align us more. Or, you know, this is where we need to be. It's an interesting thing to look at, how you definitely look at divide and conquer, don't you? You look at the system has always used divide and conquer. And the fear thing is an interesting thing. Anyway, I've got a lot more to continue here. This has been bits and pieces and choppy, this one, but I've got a lot more to cover on this. As we move forward, I can't do it in each one. I just have to do bits and pieces. But I'll be back again on the next one. And take care, folks. Thanks for listening. And you can find these podcasts, of course, in the members area of the Crass Files website.